You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by Lord Jason of House Ross, Sir Jared of House Blackfyre, Lady Amanda of House Richardson, Lord Adam the Young Bull of House Parker, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, the Ghost of Harrenhal, Lord Nelson of the Long Isle, the Mother of Cats, Sir Joshua of House Ross, Lady Kendall of House Taylor, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Hand to the Hand, Sid Say Asback of Day 11, In the Light of the 11, Lord Hunter the Foulmouth, Captain of the Guard, Sir Dustin the Rooster Knight, Captain of the Guard, Sir Ron of House Golson, Captain of the Guard, Lady Amanda, Captain of the Guard, Lord Robert the Unfrozen of House Butler, Lord Paramount of Skagos Island, Captain of the Guard.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today, we're into chapter 63, Catelyn 10 of A Game of Thrones. And in the Maester Study, we will be discussing the Riverlands.
Mm-hmm.
Very significant region in the battles to come here. And actually, really, I sometimes forget when characters are like, moving, like how close are they to River Run? It's like real central, you know, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Riverlands is that central location. It's where, you know, really, it's where a lot of the story takes place. I think people kind of forget just how much the story actually takes place in the Riverlands. Just about any time anybody is traveling, it's through the Riverlands.
Right. Yeah. So we thought it was significant enough to put it in the Maester Study today and just kind of talk about. The region itself, we've done a little bit of it when we were talking about House Frey, when we were talking about that a few weeks ago. But we're going to talk about the history of River Run and maybe some of the major battles and what we have to look forward to with that region. So I also wanted to do a couple quick just special shout-outs here. Sir James is, I posted something on Instagram. He's working on, you know, a website, if you will, like a special kind of project, and I'm anxious. He does this, and like I said, he's if you have a project or a service or something, or you need something like a website, I think he does this for a living and stuff. So, you know, once it's all up and running, I'll try to get everyone his information. But we're excited. I'm kind of pumped to see, you know, what that's going to look like, Sir Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I've seen kind of the initial preview of it, and I think it's super cool. Yeah, he kind of reached out to us and was like, hey, do you guys want a website? And we're like, yes, please.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It, like, you know, part of it is it's getting somebody who knows how to do it and how to set it up the right way. That's a whole skill set in and of itself and everything. So, yeah, we're super, super glad that he's taken that on, and it's been fantastic. You know, we have a lot of members who have stepped up and are taking on different roles. So we have Magalum and Lord Adam Parker have taken on sort of the, what do we call that back in the day? When we first started the podcast, we did this, house
yeah,
words.
We did this, we had this doc going for people who join, and, you know, I mean, initially, you know, Sir Ezra and I, when we were starting this podcast, we had kind of joked about doing surnames, like, oh, let's come up with knight names.
Yeah.
And it all essentially started as a joke, but then we posted the first episode and we had some listeners like, well, do we all get knight names? We're like, sure.
Absolutely.
And now it's like, you know, it just has been running ever since. So, but we had a doc going for our patrons, and you could like put it in, like, you know, make up a house backstory and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
We had, and then we just started getting so many people who were like, you know, and then the show started and Fire and Blood came out. And it was just kind of too much for us to kind of handle. And so we've had a couple people, you know, Lord Adam Parker and Maglum, some people who have some patrons that have really wanted to kind of take over that and keep it going, and we are 100% for it. So
yeah, it's going to be awesome. They've been messaging me on the side just about what's to come, so I don't want to spoil any of that. They will release that, but once it's out there and the doc is there, anyone who's a patron, we're going to update, you know, just your title, put your sigil in there, get some of your words, and they've got some extra special surprises that I think they're working on. So we're really looking forward to that, and I'm really thankful that they've done that, because it's such a cool idea. It's just literally a task and a half to try to keep it going with the number of people who move in and out of Patreon. And once you're in, we keep your words and your name and everything in there. It's just kind of cool to go back and look at and scroll through and see how creative everyone is with their titles and, you know, all that good stuff. So
yeah, absolutely. It's a lot of fun. So I'm really thankful that someone is wanting to take the charge on that.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Now, another couple things that I wanted to mention before we get rolling here, in case anyone is interested, we mentioned this before we started before the season 8 came out and everything just went crazy. If you're interested in actually doing some more in-depth studying just on the series, or you're interested in maybe coming on the show for like a segment here and there, we actually, Sir Matt and I are looking for squires. So we have that reward available for you on Patreon. And then also, I don't know, I mean, we never know who's out there listening and what project they may be working on. But if you have a podcast, or if you have a Etsy page or something else, some type of advertising that you'd like to happen here on the show, it's all kind of, you know, up to our discretion. But, you know, reach out to us. We have the Champion's Purse there, and we can kind of, you know, promote your stuff here on the show. It's kind of, when we have listeners who also have other projects, it's really kind of cool to collaborate and you know, push their stuff out there. So
yeah, absolutely.
So I thought that'd be kind of cool. So that's been a while ago since we mentioned that, so we just wanted to bring it up and get that out there for folks to kind of consider. So, but oh man, okay, all right. Hey, Sir Matt, how you doing? You doing all right?
Hey man, I'm good. You know, I was dealing with my crawl space, remember?
Yep.
And then that ended up taking like weeks longer than I thought it was going to. And so, you know, it was affecting my office where I do my recording. And it's just, you know, the house was just a disaster. It was a mess. But finally got that finished. And then I did some painting. So I have painted the office, and now I'm kind of putting it back together. So it's not exactly how I want to go, but at least it is functioning. So forgive me if I had some shoddy audio quality the past 2 weeks. I don't know if I did or not, but I was filming like in the kitchen, because that was really the only place I could. And, you know, I try to have the best audio quality as possible. But now we're all good.
Yeah. I mean, my gosh, you were, I mean, under siege there for a while. You had all sorts of stuff going on. I'd call you and you're like,
oh, it was I sent you pictures of what the crawl space, you know, what the house looked like there. You know, there's a guy got guys in like hazmat suits. You know, they did this thing called encapsulation. I mean, now it's like really nice down there. It's like you can almost have a party down underneath the house. Okay, it's
oh jeez, like, good guy. You know, anytime I think of crawl spaces or like attics, I don't know if anyone's seen the movie The Grudge, like the first movie The Grudge. It just scares the daylights out of me, man. Go check that movie out, and then think about getting into your attic or your crawl space. You'll think twice, I promise you.
Well, you know, here, unfortunately, it's where I live on the water table here in Portland. Anybody who knows anything about the Pacific Northwest knows that it rains a lot here. Rained today a little bit, but So there's some water issues, but it should be all squared away now.
Good. Nice.
Keyword there is should.
Should. Yes, absolutely. So, man, that's good. That's good. I actually, today was up in Kent, Ohio. I went to a little festival there. They've got some wizards doing some weird stuff with wands. You know what I mean? It's something called Wizarding World of whatever, but it was cool. I met some of our listeners up there, and it was good to see some of those folks, and shout out to any of you who stopped in, said hi, and all of that. Send me a raven, send me a message, and let's connect, because it was cool. It was really cool to stop up there and do like kind of a meet and greet, and we're hoping, Sir Matt and I are hoping to do some of those at Game of Thrones, con stuff. We've already got stuff planned for Hyperspace Hangout, next year, so we got to get something on the books here for Game of Thrones. So if you guys have a...
I know, Con of Ice and Fire just happened. We did not attend. We were not invited, which is cool. But, I mean, hey, all these other people get to go speak. Let's make it happen next year.
Yeah.
I want the invite.
You want the invite, yeah. Well, I didn't even know that there were invites. I don't know how all that stuff works.
I didn't know either, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just like, you know what, Sir Matt, I'm just a simple hedge knight, okay, my friend? I'm just out there making my way through Westeros, trying to pledge my sword here and there, do what I can, watchful.
Me too. Yeah. I would just like to be invited to the gathering, is all I'll say.
Yeah, so you can decline. I'm just kidding.
Yes, so I can then decline, That's the real power move. Now... Now, I'm okay.
Oh gosh. Well, I mentioned
it's like how on Tinder, you always swipe left because you got to play hard to get.
Oh my god.
I mean, that's just how it works.
You're playing real hard to get. Same thing.
You got to play real hard to get. Okay.
Can't match with anybody.
Jesus. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, dude. Wow.
Let them know you mean business.
Actually, what that makes me think of? Later, I think after this. We're kind of doing things in reverse order, but we're going to record the Q&A session.
Yes, we are.
Wow, that's going to be nice and juicy. So that'll be fun. You guys should look forward to that. Yeah. I don't know where we're going to probably post that on the main feed, my friend. Just really get all the...
Yes, we are. Yep. And I have the Raven's Nest that we did a couple weeks ago edited. It will be coming out this Friday.
Okay. Yeah, sweet.
That was the episode where you were having absolutely awful audio.
Sweet. That's what I like to do. I like to put Sir Matt in the pickle, So, yeah, that's good. Okay, good. We have a lot to look forward to. Then we'll have those two episodes, later on in the week for you guys, and they'll be on the main feed. Maybe we'll do that one on Wednesday, a Q&A, and then we'll follow it up with a Raven's Nest. You'll get just a crap ton of stuff.
Perfect.
Actually, after that, that's a strong finish to July because we are also recording this weekend our attorney at Harrenhal stuff as well. So
yes, we are.
Yeah, that's our part two in a 4-part series, and having a lot of fun with that. Been thinking more and more. We have tons of comments on Patreon, and we even have a thread going on the Facebook page where we'll incorporate that into our discussion, and it will just kind of continue to evolve and grow, and should be pretty spectacular. So, okay, my friend, I wanted to mention here we have a couple. Lord Robert the Unfrozen has got a couple polls going for us, and one is not quite finished, so I'll save that for next week. But the results from last week's poll, the poll was, where in the world is Halland Reed? Okay, and I love that you can add options. Like, people can go in there and just add their own little thing,
Yeah.
It's hysterical. Some of the options were nuts. But the top three results were, number one, in Greywater Watch with Mage Mormont. Two, the Vale, posing as Shadrach the Mad. Three, hanging out with the legendary Hot Pie. So
that's pretty... I believe it.
Yeah.
Well, he shows up in season 8 when they're having the council.
Mm-hmm.
One of those guys is Howland Reed. Like, that's who he's listed as. Is Howland Reed?
Really? They said that? I didn't know that. Okay.
But yeah. It's like the really random guy. They're like, who's that? Like, I don't know anything about that guy. Yeah, he's supposed to be Howland Reed. And so it's like, okay, I wonder if that was just a tease or what the deal was with that.
Yeah, huh. That's strange. I mean, that can't. I mean, come on. That right there is enough to show you that what goes down in the books versus TV show going to be night and day different. Even if you've got the same pillars, the same sort of getting to the major points, Harlan Reed's going to be mentioned. He has to be, right? If he's alive, you know, if he is alive and available, I feel like we'll talk to him at some point in the books. But that's just my belief.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, well, not that I really want to go back to harp on things from season 8, but I think it would have been better if that would have been Mira Reed instead.
Oh, and in the show.
Since they were deciding about Bran being king, but you know, I mean, they barely had time to explain just about anything, so let alone have a kind of back and forth sesh between Mira choosing to let Bran.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. That would have been nice to see her there, quite frankly. Just because she could tell more of that story. You know, like the mm-hmm. that was told to Tyrion, she could have told more about what happened beyond the wall and all the great deeds and what have you, or the perilous adventure that they went on and how they came back. Yeah, that's too bad. It's unfortunate. They would have had to pay her. Okay, so
yes.
So there's that. Okay, just a couple more quick shout-outs here. All of our Sworn Swords, we thank you guys. You guys are wonderful, and they're participating like crazy, you know, over on Patreon. So just some good people there. Next episode, I'm going to go through everyone. We've already mentioned a few, and we will mention more later on. We have a Raven this week from one of them as well, too. So we'll get there. Oh, and the Discord server, again, just fantastic. Going in there and checking out some of the show news, Sir Ant of House Hawk, killing it in there as always. So lots of updates. Go check that out. If you guys need a link to that, I think we posted that several times in the Facebook, but I know as new people come in, they're looking for a link or an invite to the server. Just hit somebody up in the Facebook group and we can get that for you. I think I've allowed everyone to make instant invites or given them the access to make those invites. So.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. All right. Well, let's head on over to the Maester's study, Sir, as we're going to be talking a little bit about the Riverlands.
Yeah. So, just going over some of the history here, and looking at this, you know, one thing that we know without looking, because we've done some of this work in A World of Ice and Fire early on in the podcast, and going back to Fire and Blood, we know a lot about the Targaryen era, and we understand that, you know, during Aegon's conquest, that, you know, Aegon kind of lifted House Tully up, right, into governing the Riverlands, which was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of this, they've been around, they're referenced as early back as the Andal invasion, so they served under House Mud of Oldstones. I thought this was kind of neat because, you know, we have the prequel show coming up, and they're talking a lot about the idea that it's not just seven kingdoms, it may be hundreds of little tiny kingdoms that could be warring and stuff, and I think that's going to be really interesting. So, for example, House Tully here, being in service to House Mud, their king was King Tristopher the Fourth Mud, who was killed during the Andal invasion, and after the king's death, Sir Axel Tully constructed the Red Castle at the juncture of the Red Fork and Tumblestone. So anyways, just kind of a little nod to the idea that we're going to have a lot of little tiny kingdoms, little houses, and we're going to see what now are our great houses in a position that we haven't seen them before. You know, House Tully, we would expect to be, you know, big dog over there in the mm-hmm. Riverlands, but they're not going to be, right?
No.
So, let's see here. So during the Targaryen era, I'm going to read a little bit of this here. So King Aegon Targaryen named Edmure the First Lord Paramount of the Trident. Aegon visited the Riverlands during his royal progresses. So during, I think it was at one point, Harren the Black, yeah, who was kind of thrown down. Remember, Aegon takes Beleriand all the way up into the sky, comes down on Harrenhal, mm-hmm. destroys it, you know, just tears it to shreds. Harrenhal was supposed to be this castle, this keep,
impregnable
that was just
fortress.
In, you know, it's yeah, it's yeah. You couldn't get into it. It was They weren't worried about
the Titanic of fortresses.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, and yeah, and so except for, you know, our dragon was the iceberg, right? I mean, it's so there's that. And Aegon, because he doesn't bow, I mean, because he doesn't bend the knee, Hare in the Black and his and House Hoar is they're just done away with. They're completely just wiped off the their line is ended, if you will. So that was a cool little line in Fire and Blood and in A World of Ice and Fire, that little nugget to, like, when you stand up against the Targaryens, you got to be careful. I mean, they will just end you like that. So let's see. There's more details here about just who House Tully supported during the various kings and stuff, but it's just interesting that House Tully, you know, how they kind of rose to this position. And they're not one of those like the Starks, as far back as we can remember, or as far back as we know, have been the major force or power, major player, even though they did have some warring going on there in the north with other kings and other kingdoms. Mm-hmm. They've been a big player for a while. But when you look back to the Andor invasion, knowing that the Tullys are just sort of this minor house at first, not minor, but, you know, in servitude to House Mud, I thought that was kind of a little bit interesting and something for us to look forward to. Now, as far as its location, Sir Matt, you know, you want to talk just a little bit about, like, we believe it's significant, River Run, just where its location. We have a lot of little battles there. It's sort of a region that you want to control.
Well, it's important to control. The Riverlands is definitely important to control because it's essentially the center. You know, you've got the north to the north, the Westerlands to the west, and the Vale to the east. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, to the south is where you kind of start to have, the Crownlands is kind of directly south from it. I think the Reach kind of touches it a little bit as well. But it's like a lot of trade happens there. There's a lot of passing through. The King's Road goes right up through the Riverlands. So having control of that is essential. Now, the downside to the Riverlands is that you really have to make strong and strategic alliances, because if you say, you know, if you're in the Riverlands and you were to, say, have an alliance between the Westerlands and the Vale, and you suddenly went to war or battle with them, you'd be pretty screwed.
Sure.
Because now you're going to have to defend on two fronts. And so that's ultimately kind of what ends up happening to Rob, is Rob gets kind of trapped down there, and you know, then the north gets kind of taken, but I mean, it's kind of after the fact, but the Greyjoys get there, you know, when the Greyjoys get to Winterfell, and then he's kind of caught in a pickle, because he, you know, later he says, how can I finish this war if I don't even control my own house?
Yeah,
So, you know, that right there just kind of shows you, and it may be something that we see in the prequel, right? Because we're going to have a lot of warring kingdoms. You know, the Riverlands being right there in that central location, you're kind of screwed if you don't have strong alliances because of just of your location.
Sure. Yeah, and yeah, with that many more kind of warring, you know, kingdoms and things, yeah, it's I think your location is going to be really important too. Yeah. Yeah. Making those alliances with surrounding houses and stuff. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple things here. I pulled up the wiki and I want to kind of read through some of this, just talking about the region, if you will. So River Run, well, actually first let's talk about, I keep saying River Run. I mean, like Riverlands, and then you've got River Run here is our castle. So River Run is a strong three-sided castle, although not especially large. The castle is bordered on the north by the Tumblestone and on the south by the Red Fork, while on the west, a third side faces a massive man-made ditch. In time of danger, the sluice gates can be opened to fill a wide moat and leave the castle surrounded on all three sides by water, turning River Run into an island and leaving it practically unassailable. It commands a view of many leagues. So I thought it was important because if you look at images, there's some really cool images on the wiki, and they did a pretty good job of this in the show. It can completely be surrounded by water. I mean, it's just, you can't even get your siege towers up there, if you will. I mean, it's very hard to get into, and that's why later on, Brendan will, it'll be so difficult to kind of root him out, if you will. So,
Yeah, absolutely. That is kind of your, you know, it's interesting, and this is something that Gurr does really well in his world building, is, you know, you start thinking about, oh, what's kind of the, you know, what's kind of like the worst house, right? Like, what would be the easiest house to take? Well, a lot of these castles and a lot of these people, when you really start thinking about it, you know, in Gurr writing gray characters and you know, think about a year ago when we were still all in the belief, you know, before the show has kind of changed, I think a lot of people's perspectives, we were all still in the idea. We had no idea who's going to win.
Sure, yeah. Right?
And remember, the books could still totally go a different way, and you and I have both kind of believed that they might or probably will. But, you know, when you start thinking about these castles, right, it's like, what would be the hardest castle to siege? Well, some people say Storm's End's impossible. Then you hear the Vale. That seems pretty hard. Right. Casterly Rock has never been, you know, breached. If you wanted to march north on Winterfell, even River Run. I mean, how are you going to siege that castle? They've got a huge moat around it. You would have to, luckily what Jaime does, we see in the show when he sends Edmure Tully over, because they have to let him in. Yeah, right.
Right.
The siege of Riverrun. Like, that's really smart. That is a really, really, really good idea, because otherwise you would just die. You would get, I mean, those guys could hold out as long as they had arrows, essentially.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a really good point. I mean,
arrows and food.
Yeah. It can actually be, I think it says a garrison of 200 men is plenty large enough to defend it, and it can hold supplies for men and horses for as long as 2 years. So that's pretty epic, you know. So it's got good stores, and you know, I mean, it's also neat in how its exterior walls are part of this defense, and the river can kind of flow in and through it, you know, around and through that. But then you've almost got like this secondary, what is it? You got the battlements that are on the outside there. And then you've got the main gate is even like inside of that. So it's just like kind of double layered. It's like super hard to get into it from what I can tell, and from just like the pictures and from, you know, Gurr's description here. So really, I mean, more so than I think I typically think about it. When I think of Riverrun, I'm just like, because of Edmure, sometimes I think, it is what it is. It's, you know, he loses. They go back here and, you know, Jamie's got him surrounded, and that's that, right? But really not necessarily. They're ready to spring from that fort. I mean, if they get any help on the outside, which is what we're going to talk about today, if they send some ravens out or get some of their bannermen to come rally to their cause, they could easily fight their way out of here. We see later on Brendan possibly from the show, right, gets away and all that kind of stuff. So, well, actually, no, sorry.
Well, you know, he doesn't get, in the show, he doesn't get away. Well, we don't necessarily see his death. In the books, he might.
Yeah. We'll get to that part in the books. Yeah. So anyways, it's neat. I mean, it's just a neat little keep, and it's unique because of the three kind of converging, the two, and then one artificial kind of waterways that run right up to it. So, yeah, there's just a little background on it, and it, you know, even Sir Matt, when you look on a map, and you look at where Harrenhal is versus where Riverrun is, because later on Peter Baelish is going to get the seat of Harrenhal and be kind of proclaimed Lord Paramount to the Riverlands and all of that. It seems like a better spot to be in Riverrun. I mean, Harrenhal was great because of the castle, because it was such an epic keep, but I feel like location-wise, and people can argue with me, I'd love to hear what people think about this, just being on the river there and having this type of setup, I think is a better spot to have your major house, you know, your capital kind of.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, I don't know, interesting stuff. River Run's cool. We will be passing in and out and through here. We'll be learning more about it. We'll be learning about High Heart, Acorn Hall, all this good stuff. So Definitely more to come on this region. So, all right, my friend, I think we are ready to dive into the reread here. And it's kind of a short chapter, isn't it?
Yes, this was only about 20 minutes. You and I both listened to the audiobook. I think this chapter was about 20 minutes. This week we are into Catelyn 10. So last week we were talking about Tyrion 8. That's where Tyrion had his own battle. He and the clansmen were assigned to the vanguard under the command of Sir Gregor Clegane. Returning to his tent, Tyrion was greeted by a whore named Shay, who Bronn had found for him. Tyrion and his clansmen do well, and the enemy is routed after they're attacked. But afterward, Lord Tywin Lannister learns that Robb Stark has tricked him. So this week, Catelyn 10, Robb Stark has managed to lead his host to Riverrun without detection. Now Catelyn waits with her guard as her son leads his host to ambush Sir Jaime Lannister. Once the battle is over, Robb returns with Jaime as captive. However, the death of several of Robb's party mars the sweetness of the victory.
Yeah, this is, I mean...
Okay. This is kind of the... This is where you really start to see the first kind of... this is really the first battle where you start to see, oh, wow, we just lost some really big characters. I mean, before this, it's really just kind of Ned Stark's men being kind of killed in the streets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, losses. You get the consequences of battle and war here, and it really... Mm-hmm. It plays a big part down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The woods were full of whispers. Moonlight winked on the tumbling waters of the stream below as it would its rocky way along the floor of the valley. Beneath the trees, war horses whickered softly and pawed at the moist, leafy ground. While men made nervous jests in hushed voices, now and again she heard the chink of spears, the faint metallic slither of chainmail, but even those sounds were muffled. "It should not be long now, my lady," Halas Mullen said. He had asked for the honor of protecting her in the battle to come. It was his right as Winterfell's captain of the guard, and Robb had not refused him. She had 30 men around her, charged to keep her unharmed and to see her safely home to Winterfell if the fighting went against them. Robb had wanted 50. Catelyn had insisted that 10 would be enough, that he would need every sword for the fight. They made their peace at 30, neither happy with it. "It will come when it comes," Catelyn told him. When it came, she knew it would mean death. Hal's, perhaps, or hers, or Rob's. No one was safe, no life was certain. Catelyn was content to wait, to listen to the whispers in the woods and the faint music of the brook, to feel the warm wind in her hair. So, yeah, this chapter is... it's kind of like a whirlwind, really. You know, it starts out and we get a little bit of backstory of Kat. You know, they do kind of some flashing back about, you know, the next line is, she was no stranger to waiting. You know, and then we start hearing about what her father had, you know, had said to her. "Watch for me, little Kat," her father would always tell her when he rode off to court or fair or battle. And she would, standing patiently on the battlements of Riverrun as the waters of the Red Fork and the Tumblestone flowed by. You know, then comes back talking about Hoster Tully. "Did you watch for me, Cat? Did you watch for me, little Cat?" Brandon Stark had made her wait as well. "I should not be long, my lady, when we will be wed when I return." But when the day came at last, it was her brother Eddard who stood beside her. It was his brother Eddard who stood beside her in the Sept. You know, and now she waits for Robb.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you said it before we started this. Family, right? Duty, honor, being
family,
important.
Family, duty, honor.
Yeah, and just kind of thinking about those things. Yeah, I mean, this is a... What's crazy about this chapter, one of the biggest takeaways, I think, is the idea that this is all a big setup. They don't really mention it explicitly here, but to get... They've lost Tyrion, and so to gain another Lannister here is a huge bargaining chip, and it's a huge way in which they can help, you know, Eddard Stark, right?
And the girls,
right?
Because they believe, you know, they believe that they have Arya and Sansa.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. So
I mean, at this point, they have. Yeah, as you said, Eddard, Arya, and Sansa. And so to get Jaime is that huge piece.
Yes. Yes. So they, I mean, there's this, to keep Tywin where he's at, they send Roose Bolton and he does his thing and it's sort of, it's a feint. And then they come here with their host. I think it says they have around 6,000 men, maybe 6,000 mm-hmm. plus here. And then, but they're actually vastly outnumbered. But the Lannister host is kind of spread out on three different camps, and we'll get to the Battle of the Camps later. But they realized, and let's see, who was it? It was Brendan Tully, had realized that, well, he knows that Jaime Lannister is very restless, and he doesn't like to sit in camp, and there was a lot of raiding. So let me just read a little bit here as kind of a setup, a prelude to this. So, before this, just kind of an understanding where we're at. So Jaime Lannister had you know, he had attacked the River Lords and their forces at the Golden Tooth and River Run. He captured the heir to the Riverlands, Sir Edmure Tully, and many of his knights. Jaime besieges River Run, the capital of the Riverlands, while the host, or the while the host of his father, Lord Tywin Lannister, closes the King's Road to the east, methodically captures the castles of the Riverlords. So they've got this plan to kind of like Tywin basically getting across the Twins and sweeping down kind of north and then keeping, you know, this sort of tight west course. They're able to slip over around Tywin's forces, but also send a force down where there's rumors that his forces, you know, a day and a half march away or whatever. And so Tywin's kind of staying right there on the other side of the river on the King's Road, trying to close that way down, not thinking that they're going for River Run, which is just, you know, the awesome part to all of this. But then when they get there, they realize that their forces are split. Brendan Tully realizes that Jaime Lannister is going on these, he's going out and about. There was raidings, right, Sir Matt? There was,
gosh. So, you know, later it's kind of Sir Gregor Clegane is just kind of raiding around. And that's, I mean, that he's also, his kind of raiding is also what caused it, what ultimately ends up starting the war, right? Because that's when Ned sends Beric Dondarrion out.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that is all happening. True, exactly. One of the forces, while their Lannisters are encamped here, it's Sir Mark Piper. And so, again, as these characters pop up, I want to kind of talk about them a little bit. So Sir Mark is a Knight of House Piper, an heir of Lord Clement Piper. He is a good friend with Sir Edmure Tully. So while Jaime's kind of encamped there in front of River Run, Sir Mark is attacking, and it's almost like you know, they would hit him, and then they would fall back, and then Jaime would chase. They had been doing that well before the Young Wolf shows up, and Brendan catches wind of this. He realizes that Jaime won't sit in the camp. Jaime's actually he's out there leading this. He's actually chasing down Sir Mark, and they mm-hmm. use that to their advantage, really. They lure him out in this fake sort of, letting him believe that it's just a small raiding party. So mm-hmm. just so people can understand the gist of it.
That line right there. The Kingslayer has us 3-1, said Galbert Glover. True enough, Sir Brendan said. Yet there is one thing Sir Jaime lacks. Yes, Rob asks, patience.
Yep, exactly. That's a big deal. And so kind of knowing your enemy and knowing their behavior and their characteristics is really important in this. And they were able to kind of capture him. See, because they could have just, you know, later on the Battle of the Camps, we'll talk about what happens and some of the victories that the Young Wolf has, you know, with that. But it was more important that they be patient and wait and get a big capture first. So that's what the whole, you know, battle is about. The Battle in the Whispering Wood is all about capturing Jaime Lannister. And it is not easy, as we find out.
No.
So we'll kind of keep going here. But yeah, not easy at all.
But really, yeah, but really, and you know, it's a high cost too, as you had said. I mean, this is actually one area where I like the way kind of the show does it,
mm-hmm.
rather than the books, because you get to see them talking about it, and you know, they they basically know, hey, we're about to send a bunch of men to their death.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you get the, and you get that line with Tyrion where he kind of wakes up after the battle and he's talking to his dad or to Tywin. And he says, you know, well, where's Robb Stark? And he says, with his army. And they just show the shot. You know, they skip a lot of what's happening here, and they just show the shot of him with Jaime Lannister. And I just think it's just a really cool way to do it.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's ultimately what ends up happening here. I mean, we'll get to it. But I just, it's that importance of, you know, they basically, Robb basically knowingly sends guys to their death to fake out Tywin Lannister so that they can surprise attack Jaime with essentially really the majority of his host, because it is that important. You basically, I mean, you've got the biggest bargaining chip.
Yeah. Well, and the reason they send, remember, they with that force in the books, they send Roose Bolton, don't they? And it's sort of because he's so cunning and shrewd in that he would maybe preserve as many, you know, men as he could, or he also would then, he would sell it. He was really going to sell too that they were, that this was a full on attack, and really, yeah. So that was another element to this. The trickery, if you will, is Roose Bolton and knowing who he is as a person, and that's why they chose him. He was perfect to kind of lead that little feint there with Tywin. So yeah, and then the losses, as you say here, which we'll get to, are a pretty big deal. And this is all, again, told through Catelyn's perspective. So we're kind of, it's a little bit tough to see, but there's a lot of this stillness before the battle starts, right? She's, we're listening to the whispering in the wood, right? We're hearing like the breeze through the trees and everything's kind of still and calm and quiet. All of these men are just laying in wait. There's a really good visual on the wiki. Someone's just done some, you know, trees and they've kind of got this, river that kind of cuts through here to explain. It's just Battle in the Whispering Wood. You guys can look it up. It's pretty cool. But you see how they kind of draw Jaime Lannister back in here, and then they surround him. You know, Brendan Tully is actually running away from him with his men, and you've got the Karstarks coming down, Robb Stark with the Freys, and then you've got the Mormonts and the Great Johns on the other side, on the east, moving in. It's quite a maneuver, and you know, and that's not even, that's just a portion of his forces, and they wanted to ensure that they captured Jaime. So anyways, let's go back here and we'll read a little bit.
Well, one thing I just wanted to say really quick is, you know, what you said, I think, is something really important to remember as we go forward is, you know, you talked about, you get all of this through Catelyn's perspective. You know, almost all the Robb chapters, because there are no Robb POVs. You know, it's all told through us through Catelyn's eyes. And again, that's just something, I mean, really, I would say, like, I mean, I'd have to go look at the exact number, but I mean, I'd say it's got to at least be 90% of the, you know, what you would consider as a Robb chapter is really just a Catelyn chapter. I mean, they're Catelyn's. There's really not many other chapters that I can think of off the top of my head where you get a lot of Robb through someone else's perspective. And so again, I think that's just something that's kind of cool when you think about like the difference between the book and the show. In the show, we get to kind of see Robb develop as his own character, just because, you know, you can just through camera angles and stuff like that, and if you start a scene with him, then it seems like Robb's scene. So I think that he does have some differences in the book and the show. In the show, he does seem a little bit more like his own man, but in the books, just through Catelyn's perspective, it's always about him growing up, and we get a lot of that here. You know, when she's talking about there's a line a little bit earlier, let him grow taller, she asked the gods, let him know 16 and 20 and 50, let him grow as tall as his father, you know, please, please, please. And she talks about him putting on his armor, and now he's starting to grow a beard. Yep. And, you know, good, you'll have to do this, you'll have to do that, you'll have to do this. And I think it's just really cool and interesting to think about. You know, we preach this a lot, this idea of perspective, but it really is the whole thing in the books, is these POV chapters, you know, our characters, the characters we see are completely told through us through certain characters' eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And on that note, I mean, it's so she's concerned about her son and his well-being, and that's why you get her evaluating the characters around him and this personal guard that he has around him, which becomes kind of a big deal. So let's see, he's getting ready to go. We talked a little bit about his squire. One of the Frey boys is there helping him with his horse. Let's see. He told her, "Father says you should let the men see you before a battle." So he's doing that whole, you know, he's on his horse with his personal kind of guard, and he's about to go out and encourage everyone, right? And she says, "Go then, let them see you." Rob said, "It will give them courage." And she kind of wondered, then, who will give me courage? You know, she's worried about her son, you know, going out here and getting killed. This is a very, very real tense, serious moment. Yet she kept her silence and made her herself smile for him. Rob turned the big gray stallion and walked him slowly away from her, Graywin shadowing his steps. Behind him, his battle guard formed up. When he'd forced Catelyn to accept her protectors, she had insisted that he be guarded as well, and the Lord's Bannerman had agreed. And that's important. That's actually important, because I wonder, she's insisting that he be well protected. And yeah, he really needed it, right? Many of their sons had clamored for the honor of riding with the young wolf, as they had taken to calling him. Torin Karstark and his brother Eddard were among his 30. Okay, you had a Malister, Small John Umber, Darren Hornwood, Theon Greyjoy, no less than 5 of Walder Frey's vast brood. Along with the older men like Sir Wendell Manderly and Robin Flint. One of his champions was even a woman. Dacey Mormont?
Yeah, I think so.
If I pronounced it wrong, I apologize, but I think that's what it is. Dacey Mormont, Lady Mage's eldest daughter and heir to Bear Island, a lanky 6-footer who had been given a Morning Star at an age when most girls were given dolls. Some of the other lords muttered about that, but Catelyn would not listen to their complaints. This is not about the honor of your houses, she told them. This is about keeping my son alive and whole. And if it comes to that, she wondered, will 30 be enough? Will 6,000 be enough? So I just thought it goes, you know, kind of unspoken here, but this heir to Bear Island, she's kind of a cool little character, you know, it's just that kind of pops up here, and she's this 6-foot lanky woman who clearly there's no question that she is battle hardened or that she is good enough to be with this personal guard. If she weren't, she wouldn't even be here. This wouldn't be a question. It's not about house. It's about how good you are. So Dacey's skilled, right? She's a skilled warrior, which is kind of cool. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's another Mormont, character that we don't really see enough of, and I mean, that's why I really love Lyanna Mormont in the show. I think she's great. I think she's a great addition. So it's just kind of like what's her name? We were reading about the Lawston lady. Oh, I'm blanking on her name right now. Like Danielle Lawston, when we did our Lost in Shield episode around Christmas time.
Oh yeah.
And who shows up in the Dunkin' Egg series, and she's this like, you know, super awesome, like badass warrior. And I mean, this kind of just, that's what it's kind of reminding me of here.
Yeah, let me see here. I think I've got Lady Danielle Lawston, called the Mad, right? So she's the Mad Lady, yeah. Yeah. She was, yeah. That was she was leading kind of the charge in some of those historical battles that we covered. Yeah.
Right. So it's kind of, it just reminds me of a similar character with Dacey Mormont here.
Yeah, and you know, while we're on the Mormonts, I mean, Mage Mormont is a character too who, we haven't talked a whole lot about, but she's a big deal riding with this host here, and Mage is known as the She Bear, and so we get into more of their house and what's going on and where she is later on. That becomes kind of a cool thing to speculate about, but we'll keep track of the Mormonts as we get, you know, some more information there. But it's the idea that these, I think it's a couple of these characters who are going to face the Kingslayer here pretty soon.
Mm-hmm. So then we hear they are coming. Catelyn thought they're coming, my lady. Hal Mullen whispered. He has always been a man for stating the obvious. Gods be with us. She nodded as the woods grew still around them. In the quiet, she could hear them far off, moving closer. The tread of many horses, the rattle of swords and spears and armor, the murmur of human voices, with here a laugh and there a curse. Eons seemed to come and go. The sounds grew louder. She heard more laughter, a shouted command splashing as they crossed and recrossed the little stream. A horse snorted, a man swore, and at last she saw him, only for an instant, framed between the branches of the trees as she looked down at the valley floor, yet she knew it was him. Even at a distance, Sir Jaime Lannister was unmistakable. The moonlight had silvered his armor, and the gold of his hair had turned his crimson cloak to black. He was not wearing a helm. He was there, and he was gone again. His silvery armor obscured by the trees once more. Others came behind him, long columns of them, knights and sworn swords and free riders, three quarters of the Lannister horse. That's essentially what she sees throughout this battle. It's kind of told through us, you know, you just through Kat's eyes, and she's hearing, you know, there's a really good line here in a little bit. You know, she hears a war horn, she hears, you know, she just starts hearing clashing of armor and all of this stuff, and she says, "So this is what death sounds like," she thought. And it's basically, you know, just hearing war. She's hearing the battle go on around her, and that's how this battle is essentially told to us, because it's really dark. She can't really see, but she can hear it, and it sounds fast paced and it sounds kind of chaotic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. Yeah. What's cool too is at one point she has to even like close her eyes because she just can't see anything, and so she uses her ears just to kind of listen and gauge what's happening. You've got Grey Wind, you know, howling. You've got the trumpets, and then you're getting shouts of Winterfell, you know, and all this craziness. So it's definitely, it's on for sure, and it doesn't last too long. I mean, that's the thing. It's this quick sort of battle, but those who interact with Jaime Lannister personally are the ones who are going to suffer here. I mean, like, I think the taking of most of his men was probably pretty easy, but then those who were, you imagine Rob is riding with his great warriors, and you know, Sir Jaime Lannister would have good men around him as well too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. The last three chapters we've had have all involved battles. You know, you go back to the Dany chapter where, mm-hmm. you know, it's Khal Drogo gets injured, and it's kind of like coming up and seeing kind of the aftermath of it. And then last week we were talking about Tyrion and Tyrion being in a battle. And so he gets to see a battle. It's still chaotic. It's still very similar, but it's described to you by what Tyrion sees, whereas this chapter is more described as what Catelyn hears. And I just think that's kind of interesting. You get these three kind of perspectives on battle through Dany, Tyrion, and Catelyn, all kind of in a row, because more often than not, it's like the story jumps way around. I mean, it's there's not really a lot of chapters, especially as we go further and further in the story. I mean, it'll go from like Daenerys to Jon to, you know, something that's going on in King's Landing to Arya and the Hound. And it's just kind of bouncing all over the place. And, you know, you and I talked about a couple weeks ago in the Dany chapter how it feels like, you know, Dany's always kind of off doing her own thing and her story feels really removed. And so I do think it's really cool when we get these chapters that actually kind of tie into each other, because it doesn't happen a lot. And this just happens to be two chapters that tie directly into each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you see this kind of war that's going on from two different sides, you know, from two different things. You get the Tyrion battle, and then, oh, as soon as you jump in to this chapter, it's like, oh, here we go. We knew what was going to happen. And it just doesn't do that a lot.
Well, yeah, and what's different about the Daenerys chapters, right, is that we just have to rely on her for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so,
yeah,
and that's kind of tough. And we get really used to her, and we really start to understand her, and we're meant to fall in love with her and really understand her ambitions and her fears and all that kind of stuff. So that's really cool. But then you're right here. We hear Tyrion, you know, experience battle. We see how that goes through his eyes, and then we've got
Catelyn's really ears here. Really more, I think. I mean, because it's at night, so you can't really see it, and so it's described to us through kind of what she hears.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. And let me see
and
here.
And that's just really, that's just really the brilliance of Gurr. Because it's something we don't talk a lot about is really Gurr's writing style and how he describes chapters. And I just think it's really interesting to kind of point out because, you know, one thing he does that's really interesting that a lot of people don't do is Gurr ends every chapter on kind of the climax. Like there's really no kind of resolution. A lot of books do that where it's like it ends. Okay, it is exciting, right?
Sure.
But I mean, he ends it. It's always like the peak.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you'll have an event happen and then, okay, there's, you know, at least some resolution in a chapter. And then you kind of move on to the next thing and it'll be like, okay, the next day, this is where you pick up. But that's not really how he does it.
Right. Yeah, yeah, it really keeps you engaged, I think, and you're wondering, and you know what happens right after that situation, and you even when you come back to that same region and area, you don't always get it. You'll get that they're in a different location, and then that character will have like a flashback and remember how they moved across this region or whatever. Yeah, it's great storytelling. It's fantastic. Yeah. Very engaging.
Yeah. So right here, I just want to read one more kind of thing here. And it's still kind of going on right before Jaime gets captured. You know, then she blinked and there were only men rushing down to kill or die. Afterwards, she could not claim she had seen the battle, yet she could hear. And the valley rang with echoes, the crack of a broken lance, the clash of swords, the cries of Lannister and Winterfell and Tully, River Run and Tully. You know, when she realized there was no more to see, she closed her eyes and listened. The battle came alive around her. She heard hoofbeats, iron boots splashing in the shallow water, and the woody sounds of swords on oaken shields, and the scrape of steel against steel, the hiss of arrows, the thunder of drums, the terrified screaming of thousands of horses. Men shouted curses and begged for mercy and got it or not, and lived or died. The ridges seem to play queer tricks with sounds. I just think it's cool. I just think it's interesting.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Totally pulling on your, it's great imagery is what mm-hmm. it is. And what's it, something that right next to that, like just on down a couple lines, when she hears Rob's voice calling out and he's telling men to me, I didn't make this connection until just now, you know, later on, Jaime Lannister is like fighting towards the young wolf. It's like, okay, he already knows, like he's lost, he's been tricked, he's been in this situation, he's gonna do the most damage that he can, and he seeks out the young wolf and he's trying to put an end to him. And so it's interesting that I wonder if Rob was saying that, you know, the to me like to rally the troops, because that's where a lot of they're coming from three different points. And he needed mm-hmm. more forces there, or he was rallying to make a charge against Jaime Lannister, which is what I like to think. But I also mm-hmm. kind of think maybe Jaime was getting super, super freaking close, and he had to rally people around him to say, like, this is where the fighting's happening. Let's go, let's go, let's go.
Or maybe he's challenging Jaime Lannister and saying, to me.
Oh, my.
You know, like, just bring it.
I literally, well, that would be fantastic.
Because I could see Rob doing that. Because remember, Rob, if you go back... I think I always forget whether it's a Jon or Arya. I think it's an Arya chapter. Mm-hmm. It is. It's an Arya chapter where she gets a needle with Jon, and they go out and they see everybody fighting. And you know, Rob is talking a lot of smack to Joffrey.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. I like what they did in the show too. Remember, which episode this was where he knew his strength was just to be. To almost like to outwit them and to do things that were unexpected and bold, you know, and he knew sort of what his strengths were and played to those, which I thought was mm-hmm. was kind of cool. He was mature enough to see the wisdom and not challenging someone to single combat for the
yeah, absolutely,
whatever. But yeah, it is still cool. He's still a boss. I mean, he's still someone who, you know, when I hear that cry, I'm just sort of like, and imagine from Catelyn's perspective, like, oh my, holy smokes, what's going on? Is that a good thing? Is that A bad thing, she doesn't really, when you can't really see who's winning, but when you hear more cries for Winterfell and Tully, River Run, and so on, you heard one cry for Lannister, as far as what we have here on the text. It's encouraging. That's how she gets her encouragement in this chapter. So, but yeah, I don't know. And then attention to detail, too. Rob comes back on a different horse. You know, we noted earlier that he, you know, so he loses his horse, and, you know, Gurm's just playing, he's paying attention to the stallions, which is cool.
He is. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I think Gurr's really good at that. So, so Rob comes back on a different horse. I like, she says, yet when he came closer, Catelyn saw his mailed glove and the sleeve of his surcoat were black with blood. You're hurt, she says. No, he says, this is Torrhen's blood. Perhaps, he shook his head, or I do not know. But then they coming with him, you know, great Theon and the great John have him, and they're grinning, and they threw Jaime Lannister, the Kingslayer, you know, basically at her feet.
Right. Yeah, and he's got a few words to say, right, to to Catelyn.
Lady Stark, he said from his knees, blood ran down one cheek of a gash across his scalp. But the pale light of dawn had been had put the glint of gold black back in his hair. I would offer you my sword, but I seem to have mislaid it. It is not your sword I want, she told him. Give me my father and my brother Edmure. Give me my daughters. Give me my lord husband. I have mislaid them as well, I fear. A pity, Catelyn said. Kill him, Rob, Theon Greyjoy urged. Take his head off. No, her son answered, peeling off his bloody glove. He is more use alive than dead, and my lord father never condoned the murder of prisoners after a battle. A wise man, Jaime Lannister said, and honorable. Take him away, put him in irons, Catelyn says.
Yeah, so that's sort of that wittiness from him. I wanted to mention, too, before I forget it, it's probably coming up here in a second, but the rallying, I think they're going to talk about it here. Because they do, in the aftermath, they talk about how he rallied to face down Rob, and it was Darren Hornwood, right, who loses his life, Eddard Karstark, Torrhen Karstark of Rob's personal guard. So the Karstarks are going to be pissed, which is what he talks about here to Catelyn, right, and just that,
yeah,
because Theon wants to take
and
his
we
head
know
off.
That and we know that right and we know that becomes a big issue later.
Absolutely, it does. Yeah, yeah. So also, come on, Theon, like. We need this. Did you not know going in, we need this bargaining chip? Like, we can't just, you know, cut him down.
That was the whole point.
Right. Yeah, and I get people are emotional because some big players there get killed. The Karstarks right there, and then one of the Hornwoods is killed as well. So, yeah, that sucks. And we've gotten to know them a little bit, and maybe some of our, you know, Rob and Theon are closer and stuff, and it's some of his personal guard there. But dang. And by the way, I just think, knowing what we know in the show, how was Theon doing in this fight? You know, how good is Theon?
Theon's actually pretty good. I think it's tough to say, right? Because I mean, he's really just kind of fighting whites in that last season there. But I think it would be safe to say Theon's probably actually a pretty decent fighter. He grows up in Winterfell. Yeah. I don't think he, you know, John has that huge chip on his shoulder of, you know, being a bastard. Sure. And so I think John, you know, trains a lot more and a lot harder than, say, Rob. I think Rob is also pretty good. Theon, though, I would say it's probably safe to say Rob is better than Theon. John is better than Rob. But I think Theon is not half bad. He should have a chip on his shoulder, and we see that he kind of does when he goes back to Pike. And, you know, he talks about, you know, like when he's having kind of an argument with his father, like, you know, basically I'm, you know, this is all, it's your fault that I was left there.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, what we also kind of see is, seems like he has even more kind of freedoms than Rob, like, or than John, excuse me. Because Jon still has that sense of duty of, like, I'm Eddard Stark's son, whereas Theon, I don't know if he has that as much. So I don't know if he, you know, needs to train as hard. But he's still trained by a master at arms. So So he's immediately going to be over any random soldier.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all good points there. I mean, where do they bring this up? We know that, so we've gone over some of the men who have been, you know, killed here. Theon's a boss. But right at the end, they mention briefly that they've captured, what was it, Theon? He says they had him outnumbered, or that they gave better than they got, right? Mm-hmm. Let me see here. According to Theon, the Lannisters lost 10 more, like 10 men for every one of Robb's that fell. So that's pretty cool. And they've captured...
We've taken close to 100 knights.
Yeah, 100 knights and a dozen lords, bannermen, including Gawain Westerling, Quentin Bainfort, Garth Greenfield, and so on. There's some others, Tytos Brax, and so on, which I'm looking some of these characters up, you know? It's what the reread causes us to do a little bit and look these folks up. This Tytos Brax, Knight of House Brax, is the eldest son of Lord Andros Brax, which it's an interesting, you know, house and family to kind of look up. He sticks around till a Feast of Crows. I mean, he's kind of a big deal. Not a big deal, but he's around, you know? It's like, wow.
Yeah. And then right here it finishes, and Lord Tywin, Catelyn interrupted, have you perchance taken Lord Tywin, Theon? No, Greyjoy answered, brought up short, until you do, this war is far from done. Robb raised his head and pushed his hair back out of his eyes. My mother is right. We still have River Run.
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, crazy to think how the loss of a few, how the loss of these Karstarks is going to affect things later on. You know, that's sort of a bigger thing, but it becomes huge. It becomes a huge deal in this huge wedge between some infighting, if you will, with Robb's forces. So,
So quick rabbit hole for you, Sir Ezra.
Sure. Yeah, I love him. Yeah.
Okay. So just theoretically, totally theoretically, let's say that Jaime Lannister had died in that attack. What do you think would have happened?
Wow. I mean, it just changes everything. I mean,
right. Oh, I know. It's just, yeah, just kind of a quick, what do you think?
I think, wow. You still have some issue with Robb's decisions, you know, betraying House Frey, if you will, maybe, there, but you don't have as much,
But would you though? Because he doesn't betray House Frey until later.
Right. But I think so. If they, let's say he's killed here, they're still going to go later on after the Battle of the Camps. They're going to go and kind of invade the Westerlands, the easternmost part of it. And
right.
So, you know, you still could have something there. But yeah, well, even if it's not that girl, I mean, it sounds like Robb, you know, is susceptible to falling to someone, you know what I'm saying? So that could still happen, but the whole, like the wedge that I was talking about that gets kind of created between, you know, just with what Catelyn wants to do with this prisoner. I mean, it's just crazy what she does, you know? It's absolutely crazy. And so if she doesn't have that, I think she stays more of sound mind and gives better counsel and is maybe more cautious. It's almost like she gets this chip and it's what she thinks is this unbeatable ace that she has to play. And
yeah.
It's just crazy. If she doesn't have that, I think they're way more calculating in everything. I don't know. I still think Eddard dies, but I don't know. What do you think? Is there, I guess I'm...
So, yeah, okay. So, I'm just thinking. It's total what if here, just for fun. We're going to go down this rabbit hole. So, I think if Jaime were to die, not like they capture him, then kill him. Like, let's just say that in the battle, Jaime dies. Like, like somebody shoots him with an arrow or something. So, obviously, Tywin's going to be, you know, furious. But then it just becomes I think they just flat out kill Eddard Stark. And, I mean, because, I don't know, you don't really have any more bargaining chips at that point. So, I mean, you could say, I mean, the Lannisters, you know, Cersei and Joffrey would have the power of saying, well, we still have captives. And then they don't. So, I think then you full on have to just press Tywin Lannister. But I just see Joffrey going off the handle and just killing them, like Sansa and Eddard. So then I think it would just kind of turn into like a full-on just war.
Mm-hmm.
But once Jaime's dead, once the Kingslayer is dead, news of that would get around. I think you'd have a lot more people rallying to Rob's
to Rob's
cause.
Yep, I like that.
And I mean, I still think you'd have Stannis pressing claim for the throne. I don't know if you would have Renly, because I think Renly's claim kind of comes out of the idea that, like, oh, Eddard Stark is also, you know, gonna die. And now it just seems like everyone is kind of making a claim. Because once Rob declares himself king in the north, okay, then it's like you've got Stannis saying he's king, Joffrey saying he's king, Rob saying I'm king in the north.
Yeah.
So then it kind of, and then Balon Greyjoy starts his thing. So then it's kind of like everyone is doing it. So it's like, it's just open season for the throne. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if Renly would then place a claim to the throne. So Renly may just support Stannis, even though he doesn't really like him. But he certainly likes him more than Joffrey.
Yeah.
I mean, if that happens, then the Lannisters are just screwed. I mean, they're just flat out. I mean, they're just flat out screwed. I think Dorne would get involved a lot earlier, because once Jaime's off the table, I mean, that's a big chip.
Well, yeah,
it's huge, because then it's basically it's Tywin and the Lannisters are over.
Yeah, I mean, you still got to, I mean, you know, as it said at the end of that chapter, I mean, we still don't have Tywin, which is Catelyn thinks is a big deal. So I'll give her that. But like what you're saying, even the capture of him is huge. I mean, if he would have killed him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's a huge feather in his hat. And it's just like, I think he could have, yeah, as you say, rallied more, really kind of consolidated the Riverlands and everything. Because their houses are kind of divided a little bit. Like, not divided, but you had some people who didn't answer the call who, you know, mm-hmm. like Walder Frey, I mean, who were late in coming or what have you, or who had been under siege by Gregor, you know, Clegane and what have you. So there's that. But it would have changed everything. I mean, even Cersei's absolutely, behavior, yeah. You know, I mean, like you think of her behavior and what she would have done and alliances that she would have made. Yeah, it would have been nuts. So that's a bombshell.
Yeah.
I love
hey,
it.
Hey, something interesting. Something interesting to think about. You know, it's like,
yeah,
where the story could have went if Ger had tried something different instead.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. Okay. Cool. So now. Okay. Can I mention a couple of just like these are not cool connections? No. Yeah, right.
You could not.
Yeah. I will be silenced. If you get a chance, go look up some of these. Go look up some of these people who are captured, like the bargaining chips, if you will. Those who, like Willem Lannister and Garth Greenfield and things like that. They're not major players, but it's just cool to look at their houses and look at who they're attached to and the pieces, you know, like just some of the influence that they have later on. You like we talk about a book or more later where the Manderleys get into a situation where it's like when you have one of your heirs captured or some of your sons killed and stuff like that, like it becomes a big deal and it's a motivation for why some of those lords do what they do, which I think is just interesting to note. So the reason I brought that up is because I think I just in the moment am looking at some of these characters and they play a big deal. They end up being around through a Feast of Crows and and it's really some of their fathers that are a big deal. It's like the house that they belong to is tight with House Lannister and the exchanges that are made, prisoner exchanges, you know, all that kind of stuff is really cool to keep your eye on. So I'll do that and you know, just wanted to kind of point it out for folks who are interested in looking for some, you know, cool connections there.
Okay, so let's move on over to Send a Raven.
Yes, over to Send a Raven. So we have, this is a good little raven we've got here this week. So this, let me see, who sent this in? Lady Joanna of House Wood sent this in, and I thought there was some cool little nuggets in here. She kind of did this... it's something I've done in Patreon, and it's something that I have, if anyone is interested in becoming a squire, I have a huge sort of working on my own manifesto of like green dreams and to make a green dream, I'm kind of looking at where are all the characters at the end of A Dance of Dragons, and then I've allowed myself to drift into some of those released Winds of Winter chapters to see where folks are at. But, you know, she has done this. She's taken a good look at where everyone's at and just kind of brings this up to us. She says, good afternoon, my good sirs. I hope this Independence Day is treating you well. My name is Lady Joanna of House Wood, and I hail from the Kingdom of New Hampshire. I recently discovered your podcast in post-season 8, Desperation to Fill the Thrones Void in My Life. I found Bend the Knee and started at the first Thrones reread episode. I am now at episode 26 and have been enjoying it immensely. I do not have any new theories to contribute, but I do have an idea that I thought could be fun for you to try if you're interested throughout your reread. When I was first reading the books, my brother got me the Lands of Ice and Fire, which, by the way, is an epic little companion book. It's got some really sick maps.
You have that, don't you?
I do. I do have it. And when you look up a lot of the stuff on the wiki, it's based on a lot of the artwork that was done in that book too, which is cool, just map wise, if you will. So which is a book of Game of Thrones maps, and she got that for her birthday. I decided to use these maps to help myself track where the characters were while I was reading. I took the map of the known world and put that on my wall. I then put the Westeros map over the Westeros section of the first map, just to have like a bigger canvas of it, because it's kind of small. So basically has Essos and everything else there to the east, and then this blown up version of Westeros. I then printed all the characters' faces onto special, you know, shrinky dink paper that can go through a printer. I cut out those faces, shrunk them down in the oven, glued them to pinheads. I was then able to use these pinheads to track the movements of all of the big characters while I read the books. It amazed me how close some characters came to each other without meeting, and it gave me a real sense of perspective and reality within a world while I read. Some characters did not have show counterparts, so I printed out what I thought looked, you know, close to their appearance. There are some other characters that I never had a chance to add before they died, like Oberyn and Quentin and so on, that I wanted to add before my next full reread. Okay, so that's interesting. I'd like to add young Griff and John Connington too. I also have a little heaven or Nightland, if you will. Nightlands, if you will. It's a place where characters who have died go kind of up above the map. And she has pictures for all this. It's fantastic. The empty spaces, that's sort of where she houses those characters. So currently my map represents the characters' locations at the end of Book 5. I hope you think this is a good idea. I highly recommend it. It's fun. It's a helpful tool while rereading these books. I've attached pictures of my map so you can see. Thank you so much for all of your hard work, and looking forward to many more pods ahead. Sincerely, Lady Joanna of House Wood. And yeah, this is epic. If you can do it yourself, I think it's very fun, and it is kind of cool to lay them down on a map and move the pieces around. That's just awesome, right? If you're not,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, if you're not as into that, there is another thing, Sir Matt, that you can do. What is the name of that? I got a new phone, so I don't know what the heck it's called. It's just the Ice and Fire.
The
phone.
App.
The app, yeah.
Yeah, let me pull it up here. I have it here. I have not used it because it's the World of Ice and Fire app. It's kind of a companion to the books, but it is really in-depth.
Yeah.
I have not done the premium version, but I think it's like $20. If you're a diehard fan, I'd recommend it. I have seemingly, you know, I guess I have done okay without it. But you know, Sir Ezra and I do a lot of research. But if you just specifically want to like find, all right, this guy, it's basically the wiki like in your pocket.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of content in it that the wiki doesn't fully explain that this does. I mean if you're like a, you know, if you consider yourself like, you know, really hardcore into this, I'd definitely give it a recommendation. It's a good app. There's not a lot of apps that I would ever recommend purchasing. Like, I don't really have any apps on my phone that I've ever purchased. But I mean, if this is one I think is worth the $20.
Oh, it totally is. I definitely have paid for it, and to get sort of all the information, you can kind of go book by book if you want. You can even cap yourself and say, I don't want spoilers past a certain point, which is important too. So you can kind of set yourself up for, as you're searching for information about characters along your reread, you can kind of cap how much you know about a character based upon, you know, what book you're in, if you will. So if you're not, you know, into Dance of Dragons, you can, obviously you can just sort of filter that out, and it'll remove all that information, so you can kind of just see where those characters are. So yeah, it's cool. Now, I did reply to Lady Joanna and just sort of said, we want to cool, you're going to read her Raven here on the show. And it's just kind of cool to get, just to go back and forth with folks. You know, I really enjoy that. That's the whole point of the Facebook group and Discord and Patreon is, you know, we've got thousands of people who are listening, and to have a portion of those folks come over and make friendships and make connections is just, it's huge. I mean, it's like what I experienced today up in Kent, Ohio, just going there and talking with folks who had theories, you know, who actually are listeners who haven't written into the show, but they just listen, and that's fine. That's fantastic. But if you ever get around to it and you feel like you want to, we would love to get a Raven or have you, you know, come on the Facebook page and chat with us. So Lady Joanna, though, I replied to her, and she said, that's so exciting. I can't wait to hear it. I'm currently on follow-up Friday episode back in November, so I will try to be patient and not skip ahead, but I'm not sure I'll make it. So that's fine. I'll let her know that we gave her a shout-out in this episode. She wanted to clarify, too, that she leaves the characters at their last confirmed location on the map, and this means that we, as readers, physically see the character in that location, not hear from a third party that they are there. That's why she's left Rickon and Osha there, kind of in this weird spot in the middle of the north, so not at, like, a confirmed location. You know, Davos hears about where Rickon supposedly is and is on a mission to track him down, if you will, but that's just, we heard that through a different character. We don't really know that for sure. Where we last saw him was, weird, as she puts it, weirdly in the middle of the north. So it's just her mm-hmm. personal rule, and it's kind of a, when you see some of the pictures, you'll understand that as well. Now, her PS is fantastic, and I think this is huge. PS, I now feel like Sir Adam Parker is some kind of celebrity. He definitely should. He is. He definitely should be a rule on the, quote, bend the knee drinking game. Drink when you hear his name. And I thought that was so funny because when I originally designed one of our Patreon goals was that we would make a drinking game. And this is going to be rule number one to like any. I want it to be something where you pick any episode and, you know, the odds are high that you're going to hear some phrase, you know, or someone's name or whatever. So imagine, you know, going back to those other episodes, and anytime we say Blood Raven in Follow-Up Friday, dear God, you would be, I mean, you'd be toasted within the first 20 minutes, like absolutely toasted. So I just thought that was kind of funny. So if anyone has any, you know, other names or other sayings or characters who we mention a whole lot, and you think they'd be kind of fun rules to follow in a drinking game, maybe we can put together a couple, you know, 4 to 5 rules to follow, and you can play with a friend and record it and send it to us.
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So,
yeah, I'm not really a big drinker myself, but we do, you know, the drinking game's got to happen. So,
yeah, it does. And I actually want to get
I'll do it for the realm.
Yeah, I know you will. I want to get some of these rules down, so it's like you and I have 3 to 4 rules. We'll listen to our own episode, and we'll drink every time we hear ourselves say a certain thing or whatever. You know, if it's back to Lady Stoneheart or whatever it may be, I don't know. I want people. I think it's going to be cooler if people pick the rules or the sayings or whatever. I don't know.
So. Yeah. Well, I've come up with the drinking game. Okay.
Oh, okay.
It's called Watch Season 8, Episode 4, because if for me to ever watch that ever again, I'm going to need some alcohol, okay? That's not just joking. Yeah. I just wanted to make Season 8 joke.
No, seriously, I mean, yeah, I mean, Sir Matt has to watch it drunk. that's funny. That's good. All right, well, So sweet. We got we have more Ravens too. We'll read those as we you know, kind of progress along here. So keep sending those in. We're looking for those if they're chapter related or they're just about where you're at in the reread or things you've noticed about the podcast or just wanting more information. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to get those Ravens sent to us at btkcast@gmail.com. Sir, yeah, Matt.
And
yeah.
Yes.
Did you have something there?
Well, I mean, kind of. I guess I can kind of save it here for a second, but go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just moving on to man the wall. What do you got?
Oh, go right ahead. I'll save it. It's kind of in the farewell. I'm gonna mess up the formula a little bit.
Oh, Jesus. Great.
And the time to say farewell, but you'll be fine.
Okay, good. Okay. This is what happens. Sir Matt goes off script, and I never know what's going to happen. So I do want to say that the manning the wall has been more and more fun. Just because some of you, we've seen, by the way, that folks have gone out to iTunes, and those of you who are here for the reread and who have been here for the core or for the majority of this podcast have gone and given us a review. And honestly, it's super helpful. I mean, even those who are kind of giving us some advice and stuff and feedback, that's fantastic, but they're still giving us, you know, high marks, and it's helping the podcast because we really, you know, that was something else during the show. It was crazy.
Yeah, so, last week we said, hey, could you guys give us some reviews on iTunes? And we got a bunch, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I looked, like, the next day, and I was like, oh, my God, we just got, like, six more. And seriously, those are, like, I can't stress enough. Those are huge, huge, huge help. So we really, really appreciate anyone who has ever taken the time to do that.
Yeah, and let me say, it's not just a sort of, you know, a shout-out for, like, Sir Matt and for Sir Ezra. It's like, if you actually like the podcast and you enjoy and you're going to keep listening and you're going to participate in the Facebook group, I would think, you know, hopefully, like, it's turned into a community. It's out of our hands, actually. Like, it's grown to the point where, like, we have other people who we need to kind of help us take over things and help out and become, you know, big leaders. I mean, Sir Adam, you know, Lord Adam Parker is a celebrity because of all the input, of all the manning of the wall that he has done since the beginning. And there have been many others who have done that as well. So, like, we can't thank those folks enough. I mean, we go back to just all the Ravens that we had from, you know, like Tiffany Evans, Lady Tiffany. We had, you know, in the beginning and stuff. It's just
Lady Regine, Lord James Hunter, Lady Sarah, Lady Cat, you know, of the Woodland Realm.
Yes.
A lot of people. We've had a lot of people. The Ghost of Harrenhal. A lot of people who I think have just submitted theories, and it's a ton of fun reading them. You know, I mean, whether your question or your theory is an 8-page manifesto or it's simply a, what do you think of Walder Frey? You know, what do you think of this character? What do you think? I mean, remember, the send a raven doesn't have to be something that, you know, because right now we're kind of off Follow-Up Friday. I'm sure when the prequel comes back, it'll kind of come back. But it doesn't have to be something revolving around where we're at right now. It could be, hey, I want you guys to talk about this theory. I mean, it could be something about Sorella Sand or Victorian Greyjoy or
the Quill and Tanker.
Absolutely. The Arbor Gold, you know, theory. And, you know, every time that comes up, you know, a lie is mentioned, or the mayhaps, you know, any of that stuff we can discuss. The Grand Northern Conspiracy.
Right. Yeah, we'd love to do that. So, yeah, all good ways just to kind of man the wall. And so we really appreciate that. And we're looking forward to more of that. We've got the Harrenhal series coming up here for August. We're going to get that all recorded shortly and have that posted. Should be available, I think, almost August 1st, if not, you know, shortly after. So you guys will have that available to you on Patreon. And plus a few other musings. Sir Matt and I, we just can't help ourselves. So we're on there musing and whatnot. And then later on, maybe towards the end of August, we'll have another Raven's Nest. And yeah, and that can be, you know, theory related. It can be theories or cool things in the book that you guys want to go over, or whatever it may be. I mean, we'll kind of pull together a doc and do the old fashioned, pull some Ravens in there and have our bannermen respond to those, which I think will be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
All right, man. I mean, take us off script here.
All right. We want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Chapter 64, Daenerys 8. Really quick aside here, Sir Ezra.
Yeah.
Chapter 64 means that we are less than 10 chapters away from A Clash of Kings.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, it's a big moment for us. I don't know. Maybe people weren't quite getting it. They're like, oh, these guys are just going to keep plowing through. It's like, to get through the first book is like been huge for us. When we set out, we were kind of like, we're going to do it for us, and we're just going to get through it because we want to know more about this series, and it's huge. So in the next book, just can't wait,
because everything changes once Game of Thrones, the first book, I mean, it's really just the Starks, Tyrion, and Daenerys, and that's it. I mean, those are your storytellers. When you hit book two, you've got like Davos, Sam. I mean, Cersei and Jaime don't get chapters yet, but I mean, you certainly get more insight to them. I mean, Theon, everything changes.
There's an uptick, and so it's really exciting. That's again why every week we've kind of said ironing out some stuff, getting the website, getting a few things, finely tuned and polished, I'm going to save that. That'd be a huge surprise.
That'd be a huge surprise. Don't spoil it.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Let's just say there may be, season two, Bend the Knee is coming, Clash of Kings, for those of you that like, a very specific item, we're just going to say there's going to be a way for it to be available. So you'll just stay tuned.
Stay tuned. So, all right, friends. Well, hey, if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We'll see you in a week, and remember that winter is coming.